live to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. Today is September 16, 2017. And guess what? We're simulcasting this week. This is awesome. However, we may be preempted on the other station, KRXT, doing a football game, and they'll play it immediately after the program there. But this is the first week we're doing it together. I'm very excited. And it's a major step in developing this program. And I want to thank the powers that be for allowing it to happen. Joe Smitherman, the owner of this station, KMIL, Charlie McGregor, KRXT, the owner, and all of my sponsors and all of my support team, and of course you, the listeners out there. I want to thank all of you very much, and let's keep this show growing here. Now, I start my day off every day and every week when we come to this show here with my Morning Joe from CEFCO, Hilltop CEFCO here in Cameron. It's great coffee because it tastes the same every time, and that's what I like. They have a special going on. You can get a bag of M&M's, plain or peanuts, and you buy one and you get one free. That's awesome, and if you understand the price of chocolates, that's a good deal. So go get your smokes, your paper, your coffee, your M&M's, whatever it is. Go to Hilltop CEFCO in Cameron. Tell them I sent you. Say hi, and have a good time. Now, also today in the show, I'm going to read to you four more stories of self-defense coming out of the Concealed Carry magazine and read to you my excellent commentary on each one. We can always learn from others as to what to do and what not to do in situations like these. In today's License to Carry Attorney segment, sponsored by Coppolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm, we'll be going over, again, Penal Code 931 and 932, self-defense and deadly force in defense of person. We all have questions about this, so feel free to call us during that segment to ask yours to our very own attorney extraordinaire, Benton Ross Watson. And the number here, write it down, get ready, it's 254-697-6633. Today's topic of interest, we'll cover upcoming events with Aaron's, so set your calendars to the proper month, get them open, and start taking notes on that too. And then at about 10:55, another segment of Tactical Snacking with Janae Goodman. I'll tell you what, people are really eating this segment up, so don't miss it. And yes, the pun was intended. At 11 a.m., the voice of law enforcement, retired police chief Randy Dixon, the pontificator of practicality, the connoisseur of common sense, and all-around good guy, Randy Dixon, the voice of law enforcement. Today's product spotlight, sponsored by ANC Firearms and Heidenhammer, is the Heritage Arms Rough Rider 22 Long Rifle and 22 Mag Revolver. You can go to my Facebook page at aaronsgunshop.com and take a look at the picture of it. And while you're there, like us on Facebook. And thank you to all of you who have already liked us on Facebook. We've reached the 500 mark, and now we're on our way to 600. So with your help today, go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the Facebook page, and like us on Facebook. Now, right after my spotlight, my dear friend and brother from another mother, retired Green Beret Mark Boyer, will be discussing rifle slings and his practical experience on how to use them. And then finally, my special guest today will be Naomi White from White's Leather in Milano. I've known Naomi for a long time now, and her craftsmanship with leather is amazing. So I'm going to talk to her everything from utilitarian leather all the way to erotic leather. When it comes to leather, I'm sure there's nothing she cannot do. So I can't wait for that interview. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go right into our License to Carry. I'm going to try to stick to my hard breaks. We may overlap a little bit since we have a lot going on the show today. But this is coming from the Concealed Carry magazine. And I've got four stories here, and I'll give you four of my reviews on these stories. The first one is this. Michigan concealed carry weapons holder foils a quartet of robbers, and a Yalipsi man buzzed some people into his apartment building only to find he had a problem. One of the men pulled a gun and tried to rob him. Being legally armed himself, he drew his own pistol and fired on the man, missing the armed robber but putting all four to flight. Police responding to the victim's call, apprehended four men fleeing the scene who turned out to be the suspects. Nothing was taken in the robbery and no one was injured. The police investigation continues. Now, here's my excellent commentary on this story. Ladies and gentlemen, two mistakes here. Bet you can't guess what the first one is. Any idea, Trey? No idea? Well, let me enlighten you. There's two problems here. That's right. For all you people who said he buzzed some people, quote unquote, in, who the hell are these people? You just buzz anyone in? My goodness. Don't do that. See what happened to him. Second mistake, he missed. Lack of training on his part. So lessons learned. Don't just buzz anyone in. And two, become a better shot under stress. Come to one of my round robins. Story number two. California store clerk prevents armed robbery. When an armed and masked man entered the Fairfield smoke shop and demanded money, an alert store clerk drew his gun and fired on the robber, hitting him in the chest and stopping the crime. The subsequent police investigation determined the robber had a realistic-looking BB gun, which did not alter the self-defense nature of the shooting. The store clerk legally possessed the pistol he used and acted in self-defense. He will not face charges. My commentary. Lesson number two, crime does not pay, and if you use a gun, be sure it's real, because the defenders surely will be. Story number three, Louisiana homeowner stops home invasion. A Swartz couple was in their home one evening when an intruder forced his way into the home and attacked them. Fearing for their lives, one of the homeowners grabbed a pistol and shot the intruder. The wounded burglar later died of his wounds. Police are treating the incident as self-defense. My commentary. This one's easy, ladies and gentlemen. Intruder invades the home. Homeowners, in fear of his lives, shoots intruder. Intruder dies. ABC, 1, 2, 3, lickety-split, done and over. It's that simple. Story number four. Nevada man shoots knife-wielding neighbor. A Las Vegas man awoke early one morning to find a strange man wielding a knife in his bedroom. Fearing for his life, he took up a pistol and kept to self-defense and fired a single shot at the intruder, killing him. The intruder turned out to be a neighbor, though one of the defending homeowners did not know. Las Vegas Metro Police say the preliminary investigation results appear to support a case of self-defense. And my commentary on this story is, ladies and gentlemen, asleep and quote-unquote secure in your own home only to awaken to a knife-wielding intruder. That's scary. Waking up, groggy and disoriented, the homeowner still had his wits about him to grab a pistol and shoot the intruder. That does not come naturally. The homeowner rehearsed this scenario in his head, and thank goodness he did. Otherwise, the homeowner might have had another statistic. Okay, so those are the stories of real life. Now, with a little bit of time that I've got left in this segment, I'm going to read to you this week's opinion piece, and let's see what you think about this one here. Opinion piece is titled, I'm Colorblind. You Should Be Too. Ladies and gentlemen, to the true racist, I say this. I have no time for you. You're a plague to this earth that causes discord among many. To those of you who are ignorant and follow and mimic the antics of the racist, I have no time for you either. As a suckerfish is to a shark, you are to a true racist. To those of you in positions of power who use the hate between the races to your favor, I have no time for you either. Are there bad people out there? Of course. In every race, there are bad apples. In each race, we give a name to them. Those names I will not say. I won't say them because there are better words such as ignorant, disrespectful, rude, obnoxious, criminal, etc. Fueling the flames of discord with racial slurs and opinions does nothing for the overall good. We must all bond together. We are stronger together than we are apart. Now, I'm going to illustrate using some apparatus here, okay? And we're going to turn this opinion piece into a video this week, so you can check it out on YouTube probably Monday or Tuesday. But what I have here in front of me are all the different races. I've got the white race represented in a stick. I've got the black race represented in a stick, the red race in a stick, the brown race represented by a stick, and the yellow race. Well, I have now just picked up the white race, and I'm going to destroy it. I just snapped it in half. Here comes the black races next. Broke it in half. The red race, savages, right? Break it. Brown race, Mexican. Boom, busted. Here's the yellow race. Asians, I guess, is that what it covers? Boom. Each single stick I broke with not a problem. Now, if we bond together and we get all those races together and we put them together, I can't break these sticks all together. That's the importance of bonding together. The racism's got to go. If you know somebody who's a racist, ignore them. Get away from them. Call them on it, okay? We need to work together. Remember, in every race, there's idiots, criminals, stupids, dummies, the whole works. Let us not fall into that category. So with that, I say, have a great day. Go see your neighbor. Go talk to the people on the street. Be friendly. Spread love in the air. The whole works. Stop with the racism. And that's my opinion for this week. Trey, I think we can go to a break if my timing is correct. Is that right?
You've got about
30 seconds. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to become part of the show, you can give us a call here at 254-697-6633. Give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook. You can just give us a call here at the studio. We got attorney Benton Ross Watson coming up with some great stuff. If you got some questions concerning penal codes 931 and 932, or if you have a commentary, if you got a story in real life you want to share with us, we'll listen to that too. So until we come back, we'll see you on the other side with attorney extraordinaire Benton Ross Watson. This segment of Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program is being brought to you by Twin Pistol Bail Bonds, LLC. Have you been arrested? Are you in jail and want to get out? Call Twin Pistol Bail Bonds at 254-697-6035. Twin Pistol Bail Bonds accepts credit cards and debit cards. Call-ins are also accepted. Conduct your business privately in the Twin Pistol Bail Bonds offices, which are located directly across from the Milam County Sheriff's Office at 707 West 4th Street in Cameron. You're in jail and you want to get out. Let Twin Pistol Bail Bonds help. Call Twin Pistol Bail Bonds now at 254-697-6035 and ask for Dustin Thomas or Lisa Roden. Twin Pistol Bail Bonds, 254-697-6035.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
Power. Sometimes you just need more. But what do you do when that yard equipment needs more or just isn't working like it used to? The answer is Cameron's Fall Engine, formerly Cameron's Heat Company. For friendly service and quality work, stop it at 408 West Bank. They provide all your outdoor power equipment needs. Check out their selection of Echo, Snapper, and Zero Turn Big Dog Mowers. Power through the summer with Cameron's Fall Engine. Call 254-697-3452 or stop in at 408 West Bank.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com.
Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm focuses on cases involving asbestos exposure, mesothelioma, birth trauma, defective products, and injury and death resulting from car and truck wrecks. Call the tough, experienced injury attorneys at Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron. Call 888-MESO-FIRM or 254-697-4965.
Gentlemen, we are back. Today is September 16, 2017, and we are an attorney LTC segment. And to the left of me here is attorney extraordinaire Benton Ross Watson. Ross, how are you doing today, buddy?
Man, I'm doing great. Glad to be back. You know, Rick came in, had some good segments, took over. And
you guys are a tag team match, man. Yeah. One's up, the other one's down, the other one's down, the other one's up. You just tag it out, you know, and you come in there, you're good to go. Let me just give a quick highlight of what we're going to go over here. We're going to go over Penal Code 931 and 932, self-defense and deadly force in defense of a person. Now, I teach this very often, and sometimes the lines can get blurred for even me. So Attorney Watson here will break it down, answer questions, and clarify which needs clarifying, that which needs clarifying. So ladies and gentlemen, it would behoove you, if you're a licensed to carry individual, or anybody in, for that matter, has a question concerning this particular area, to give us a call at 254-697-6633. So Ross, with that, why don't you take it away and tell us what you got going here?
Yeah, so I think a lot of times when we get into these self-defense cases, we have a lot of people, maybe not a lot of people, but I know that there are some people that get on the juries, or at least the veneer, however you want to say it, French or Texan, think, well, if you're going to do a self-defense case, that's just stupid because, you know, you shouldn't put yourself in that situation, and I don't even understand, you're guilty, in my opinion. And so I think I want to give some examples, too, about why it is that we need self-defenses. Bad things happen to good people sometimes, and good people get put into situations that they should not have to deal with. And innocent people shouldn't be, maybe anything can go wrong. And so I kind of wanted to give an example about what just happened to me. And I realize that in some of my youthful days, some people probably, if you know who I am, know I was a little bit rambunctious, okay, so to speak. But those were a long time ago. And I think that just last month, I'm in a situation where I'm in my professional capacity, and I had a lot of things in my life put at risk. And that's because I went down, a good friend of mine had gotten into college down in Houston, and we went to go move her into her apartment. And she lives close to the downtown area, kind of the midtown section. And so we went all day and the day before, and we moved all this stuff in. I mean, we were absolutely exhausted. It's about 9:30, 9:45, and she doesn't know anything about Houston, and I'm from there. And I said, well, you know, let's go down there. And we went to some restaurant. Some guy was like, man, you got to go to this rooftop wine bar. It's not really a bar. It's just kind of real quaint, nice, quiet place. You can have smoke cigars and have a glass of wine. And it's a really great and beautiful view. And they showed us a picture. And she's like, oh, that'd be really cool. What time do they close? I think they close about 11 o'clock. And so we still had time. And that was on the way home. So we were walking. And we hadn't had anything to drink at all whatsoever. No alcohol at all. And we're walking. And we think we get to the address based on Google Maps. And we go in, so to speak. And we get to the top. And we start hearing this loud rap music and all this stuff going on. I ask her, this doesn't sound like the place we thought it was. And so we get there, and sure enough, it's just a bunch of college students getting naked, dancing on the tables, just acting a fool. There's all kind of, we potentially smell something being smoked on the outside balcony of this place that probably wasn't legal. It's extremely loud music. And like I said, mostly drunk college students. And we did not want to be there at all whatsoever. And so we immediately wanted to leave, but she said, I have to go to the restroom so bad. So she goes to the restroom, and she comes out of the restroom, and we are leaving. We are walking out the door, and some drunk girl just falls down right in front of the door to the stairs, and we're waiting on her friends to come and try to help her up and drag her out of there. And in doing so, some really young, fit Mexican guy, about 6'2", right, pretty big guy, just comes up and, really hauls off and pushes me. And honestly, I just ignored it. I acted like it didn't happen. I felt kind of like a wussy because I just kind of like, okay, whatever. And then the dude pushes me again hard, where I almost kind of fall into everybody. And I turn around, I was like, man, what's going on? What's up, man? And then the guy says some kind of name, like Ricky. I think the guy thought I was somebody else, okay? And just throws a punch at me. And so going back to my amateur UFC, right? I grab his fist and I put his face into the wall. Okay, it was a quick reaction, right, to dodge a punch that would have otherwise hit me in the jaw. And I have paid a lot of money for these teeth.
They're such pretty teeth too.
Yeah, and so I'm not gonna let him hit me in the mouth again. And yeah, the guy goes down hard. Okay, and the next thing I know is I'm being detained by police, and there's a bunch of girls all of a sudden screaming that I started it, and I punched him, and I was hitting him, and I was being a butthole and all kinds of other stuff. And so I'm not saying it's because of race. I know what you said, but it was two Mexican cops. It was a bunch of really attractive Mexican girls. Don't know if it had to do with race or if it more had to do with the attractive women, okay, from the other side. And the other guy was hurt pretty bad, right? But they were going to arrest me, and it looked as though that was going to happen, except then a sergeant came on scene. He was a black gentleman. And so at this point, I already thinking there was at least a suspicion in my mind. Oh, I'm a white guy here, right? These are minority cops. They're probably on a minority person who's saying it's my fault. And thank goodness, right, that this sergeant knew what he was talking about. And he starts talking to me, and then he goes over and talks to the other guy, and he comes back over and he's like, you hadn't had anything to drink, have you? And I said, not one sip. And he said, your story is the only one that clearly makes sense, and none of those other stories match up, and I don't even know why we detained you. Just get out of here, okay? But for those 15 minutes, you can imagine the sort of the even fear that came over me. What, if I get arrested for this, you know, this is really going to affect my career, right, and my whole life is on the line here. And I did absolutely nothing wrong at all whatsoever. And so technically, I suppose that they could have charged me because self-defense is only an affirmative defense. And I had nothing to do at all whatsoever with this guy's issue with whoever it was that he had. I was only there, not even for 5 minutes, if that at all. And we're leaving. And so these things can happen to anybody. And all it would take is for one police officer to believe somebody else over me. And it's the same with a jury.
Wouldn't it be lovely to go to a white, a Mexican, or a black, or whatever color you are, officer, and not have to worry of what you said about minority this or minority that, and just have to worry about if your actions fell in the proper groove of the law? Wouldn't that be nice?
I knew that mine did, and so I was confident. And
I know, but everybody worries. Both sides of the table always worry. Well, am I a minority? What color is the cop coming? I mean, it's just sad. That's why I broke these sticks. I'm like, let's get rid of the color, man. It's got nothing to do with color. And if everybody does that, we'll be all right. But you know, that's not going to happen.
So I'm not saying that those were issues. I'm just saying that they were legitimate. Worries that I had down underneath, and I don't know, and it looked to be playing out. It was either one of those two, maybe a combination of the girls and the everybody was the same race that was involved in coming. Maybe although there was all kinds in that club. Okay, but I mean, anything can happen is what I'm trying to get at, and so we never know. Life is such a series of unexpected events that we have to make life choices about often, and we don't get a lot of time often to determine what we're going to do in a situation, and it's necessary a lot of times to protect ourselves when we get into those situations. And so, I mean, that is why we need self-defense in the law. And there's other cases that aren't as good as mine. You know, there's sometimes people put themselves in a bad position, knowing what position they're getting in before they get there. But self-defense still serves its place. So before, if you're ever on one of these juries, if you're ever in a situation like that, or you're in an environment or proceeding where you have to make some kind of determination, don't take it so lightly, because it is a serious deal. And you had asked me, I think, to prepare for this. What about, we talked about threats. What if somebody is threatened? Could I have hit that guy earlier?
Preemptive,
possibly.
Preemptive strike.
Possibly. When he pushed me the first time, I may have been, at that point, allowed to use force to dispel any kind of threat that was coming my way. And I probably could have done that.
I'm talking before that, though.
No, I know, but I want to go in incremental steps here. Yes, so on the first push, let's say that I hit him then. Hit him, didn't even stow him, because I never hit the guy. But if I had hit him, I think I could do that, because the code says if I reasonably believe that force is immediately necessary, okay, in response to the other person's use or attempted use of unlawful force. And so he had used unlawful force against me, and I had a right to be where I was. I was not violating the law by being where I was, and so I would have had a right. I would not have had to retreat, and I would have had a right at that point to defend myself, even at that standpoint, okay. And so what about, though, when we get into, like you said, if somebody is if it's verbal only? And this is a really good question, because the code says that you cannot use, right, self-defense, force in self-defense for verbal provocation alone. And so you ask yourself, what is verbal provocation? Okay, it's funny, because the jury instructions that we work off of actually say, is the force justified by words or acts of the other person? Well, if it's words, it's verbal provocation. And so at the same time, a lot of these jury instructions don't match up to what the code says. And so we get a lot of times into these really tough cases about where we have ambiguous conduct with no actual step towards somebody, an actual use of force, right? Maybe somebody is walking in a threatening manner or something, not saying anything, but saying something with their actions, so to speak. Maybe we get somebody who's saying, "You ready to die, boy?" or something like that, you know? And like this guy's yelling, "Yo, what's up, punk? I'm coming out. I'm coming out." Well, if somebody's doing that, okay, that seems like it's threatening. Are they doing action with the threats? And what exactly is the threat? And so we talked about before on the show Hudland case, where it was some bird feeders. Remember, his neighbors really feuding back and forth, and one neighbor knocked over this guy's bird feeder, you know, several thousand times or something like that. It was just outrageous number of times. And finally, the guy just gets really upset, and he goes over and confronts the neighbor about it, knocks on the door, "You knocked my bird feeder over again." And the guy... doesn't deny it, doesn't deny that he's doing it, just starts really just laughing at the dude. And so the guy takes his broken pieces of his bird feeder and just throws them in the guy's face, right? And so then that guy starts attacking the neighbor that threw the plate at him, and he sicks his dog on him, and we talked about it, then he sicks his son on him. The guy that had his bird feeder knocked over ends up getting choked out in the middle of the street by the guy's, you know, 16-year-old son. It was a really bad day for that guy, and he got convicted of assault. But the reason he got convicted of the assault and he could not use a self-defense is because the guy merely laughed at him. There was no reason. He was trying to say it was self-defense that he, you know, threw, but really the guy didn't do anything other than just really piss him off. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so he threw the plate because he was upset that the guy was laughing, and he didn't deny. It was obvious that he did it because he just starts laughing his butt off. So that is verbal provocation. He's laughing. He's just provoking that guy. But then we talked about Hamill, and that was when the gentleman helped the girlfriend who was getting beat up by the boyfriend, and the boyfriend comes over there looking for the girlfriend. They're trying to move her out, and he's like, "Where's that bee?" You know, he's saying expletives, and then the father-in-law of the guy who's moving the girl out comes in with a tire iron. "You need to leave." And the bad guy says, you know, not the defendant, but the bad guy says, "You better get your old man or I'm going to shoot him, and I got the gun in the car." Okay, well, he says, "You need to leave." Well, then he turns around and starts walking, and the guy that's helping, the guy that's the defendant, then takes his knife, remember, and stabs the dude before he makes it to the car. And remember, he was on appeal because they denied him a self-defense instruction at trial because they said he did not actually use force or attempt to use force. And so the court said you don't actually have to, right, that use, it wasn't verbal provocation alone. He had some action involved, and he didn't actually have to be going to get the gun in the car as long as the defendant reasonably believed an apprehension of danger that he would go get the gun. And in fact, that's probably what he was going to do, but there was no way for anyone to prove that he was going to get this gun in the car. In fact, they didn't even have evidence that there was a gun in the car other than his threat. Okay, but, and so that was a good case, but obviously that was a close case because it goes on appeal, and I don't think that's even a close case. You know, some dude makes a threat, says he's got a gun in the car, and then turns around and starts walking towards the car. I feel like I better do something. That guy didn't know where he was. He knew he couldn't retreat. He couldn't get out of there. He didn't know that house. He was just helping that woman. Okay, and so he stabs the guy and prevents him from getting to the car. And it was clear that's what he was trying to do because as soon as the guy started walking elsewhere, he stopped his attack. Okay, and so, but that court says something that really irks me because in the bottom of the opinion, they talk about a threat. They talk about he threatened them. The court considered this man's words to be a threat. And then they said, but these weren't words alone. His action in going to the car allowed him to give rise to the use of self-defense. But hold on a sec. A threat of deadly force, we know, is the use of force. A threat of deadly force is not deadly force, right? If it's only to show the person that you're, you know, communicating the threat to, that you will use deadly force if necessary. So if a threat of deadly force is by definition force, then it is a use of force. So why does it matter whether it is words or conduct if it is words and it is use of force, and i.e. a threat to use deadly force? I know, right, it should have been justified regardless of the guy's actions. If it truly was a threat to kill his father-in-law or him, right, then that was a use of force.
See, that's what gets me going here, man. You've got all these different ways to look at it. You said it earlier in this segment how it's says you can't attack based on verbal provocation alone, but then again, that when they give you the orders in the court to look at things, it includes actions or verb words can be.
And it says or. So,
or, right.
So making it seem like it could be words by themselves.
That puts the people out there on the street always going to question whether or not what they do is right or wrong based on who's judging them, looking at them, what's the attitude of the court, the opinion of the court, what's offered in the court as evidence, the whole works. You never know anymore, do you?
Right. I think that, I mean, you know some cases, but then there are cases that should be clear, and they're not.
Let me ask you a question. Let's put that scenario that you had about the guy going to the car and he gets knifed. Let's put it in a simpler term that I think a lot of people can do. Somebody comes up to you, and you're face-to-face, and they're threatening you verbally, and they're in your personal space, and they've got their arms up like this kind of stuff. You never know when the sucker punch is coming. Wouldn't that be equivalent to the necessity of a preemptive strike? Like, whoa, he's talking it up. He didn't actually do anything except his actions show, I don't know when it's coming, but I see the shot. I'm going to knock him in his jaw.
And so there's really no way for me to answer that question in the general terms that you put it. But I think that I think that what you're going to have to do is say that you had a reasonable belief that the force was immediately necessary, right, to respond, right, in defense to the other person's use or attempted use of unlawful force.
And your hope is in that the reasonableness of the jury will see it your way.
Yes. And so, and I also think, like, so if a threat of deadly force merely constitutes non-deadly force, the use of non-deadly force, what is just a threat of force? Is that anything? Because you take a step down. See, if I make a threat of deadly force, okay, just that I will use deadly force if necessary, then that is only, by definition, non-deadly force.
I can't tell you how many times people tell me that a jury's given a question to answer, and all of a sudden their answers are based on opinions, morality, and all this kind of stuff, not the answer to the law, the legal question. So it's like, you don't know what's going to happen. You have no clue. You could study this, and like, we're trying to be good law-abiding citizens to learn the law because it says it in black and white, and we go out there, we get screwed anyway. It's just, it's getting to a point where it's ridiculous.
Right? And so, yeah, I mean, and so it's college football, right? I mean, I'm 5'9", I play fullback, and I play defensive line. That's just insane, right? How can you play college football? I'm almost 5'10", but still, I'm almost a foot shorter than everybody on any kind of line anywhere, okay? I had a recruiter side dump from UT tell me if I was 6'1", I'd be the number one recruited guy, but he's like, you're not even tall enough to be recruited at all. So I can kind of, yeah, but I did play, and so I understand the preemptive strike very well when I played college. Well, you have to remember, fighting really wasn't as looked down upon as it is now. But oftentimes, I had to stand up for myself, and that required a preemptive strike, mainly because if those big guys got the first hit on me, I probably wouldn't stand a chance after that. And so, trust me, I understand more than anybody about getting a preemptive strike to control the situation. And I think you're going to have to determine, right, exactly if it was necessary, though, into those situations. So when you say that they're bigger than you and they're confronting you, I would say that when they're confronting you, that's not verbal alone. That's not verbal provocation alone. That is some conduct. Okay, if they're walking back and forth, pacing, or they're looking at you crazy and like walking towards you, that's some conduct involved there. But then we have cases that there's another one. It's called the Tabler, where a gentleman said, "I'm gonna wipe your family out for less than $10," and the guy lures him out 2 days later to a parking lot and kills him. But the thing is, and they say he couldn't use self-defense because that was just verbal provocation, and the court said and this is what makes it ambiguous. The court said, we don't even think that qualifies as verbal provocation. Well, if it's verbal provocation, that doesn't give him right to use self-defense. So I think what the court actually meant was, we don't think that qualifies as a threat, okay? But even if it did, that guy was so bad, he killed like 5 or 6 people, okay? And I mean, the guy really had no business killing any of those people that he did. And so those courts are not gonna, you know, try to make the law work for him. Okay, but those statements that they make just make it ambiguous for everybody else. And so at what point, I mean, I think intimidation is a factor. I think, like, obviously I was great friends with Big Lou, but I could see a situation. Big Lou was one of the, on my college football team, the biggest guy in the NCAA at one time. He's like 6'9", almost 500 pounds, right? And I'll tell you, Big Lou actually got shot 3 times in the same night when he was a bodyguard and took all 3 bullets. Chased the guy down, took his gun, and the guy got arrested. So obviously, Big Lou, right, can take a whole lot more, right, than I can, right? And Big Lou probably doesn't have to do a lot to end my life.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay, it probably doesn't take him a lot. And a gun, obviously, is not as effective on Big Lou as it probably is on everybody else, seeing as how I can tell you 2 of those shots were in his neck, and it still didn't stop him, okay? And so I can tell you that this is, I mean, yes, it just is a fact-intensive situation. And, you know, you've got to be pretty confident that in the situation you're in, it was necessary. There's no doubt.
You just said something. In my classes, I train these people, my students, to never think about the gun. You should never think about the gun. You should be so familiar with the gun that all you have to focus on is the threat. Now it's got to the point where the student is so proficient with the gun, doesn't think about the gun, and only thinks about the threat. Now they got to say, if I do this, is this going to ruin my record? Will this follow me for the rest rest of my life? Will I pay $50,000 in attorney's fee? If I'm not going to die, if I'm going to die, I don't care. If I'm going to get beat up a little bit, should I do this? Am I allowed to do this? Am I in a proper place? Then I got to start thinking, okay? Because I do not want my lifestyle, my economics to change because of some dirtbag. So I've got to, do I really want to do this? Do I want to get into this? Which puts me on the weak side of the situation. Now, there's some other people who don't care and they'll just do it and they deal with the consequences. You know, I know what the consequences are. They're life-changing. So you got to be careful.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what I'm saying. You never know when you're going to get put into a situation like I was in where you're going to have to face a threat and you're not going to have very much time. If it is truly a threatening situation, a lot of people get into tense situations that they actually could get out of if they would just be peaceful about it.
Nonviolent dispute resolution. That's
okay, right. But if a lot of times when you do get into a violent situation, one, you don't have a choice. You're not going to have much time to make those decisions. And so it is important to try to stay focused on the threat and to try to determine, right, the proper course of action to take.
But what's frustrating is you read the law that's in black and white, and you understand the little slight gray areas of reasonableness, what's reasonable to one person, so on and so forth. But when we come to learn how all these different factors come into play in the courtroom, it dilutes, distorts, perverts what you're reading here in black and white. So a person who's really trying to do their best has to contend with the attitude or the opinion of something that they're not prepared for in the courtroom.
Right.
It's like, how do you get yourself ready? There's no way to get ready.
And so you see, in my situation, I had followed everything exactly properly. Everything was exactly perfect, which is probably the only reason, right, I got out of there without any problems. Had there been one fact that I had done maybe wrong, right, I would be left with a situation where the police officers, right, could take the word of anyone else, right, and I could have done whatever they wanted to me. And so it is important to be following the law and to know your rights and to follow incremental steps. If you're in a place where you have a right to be and you're not violating the law and you haven't provoked the situation, then you have a right to use self-defense. Otherwise, right, it's a gamble.
There you go. That's the way to end it, man. It's a gamble. I mean, because if you're not 100% right, it's a gamble. So I guess you have to determine the line in the sand, ladies and gentlemen. You all have your own line in the sand. You know when your head's going to go into the bow of the boat, you'll have to make the decision. So if you got any questions, give us a call. 254-697-6633. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be going over points of interest, and we will have a tactical snack. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Again, it's September 16, 2017. We're here live. We're also going to be playing. Normally, we're simulcasting with KRXT 98.5 FM out of Rockdale and here at KMIL. Normally, it would be playing at the same time live. However, we're going to be slightly preempted on KRXT until after the game, and then the show will play right after that. So all you Rockdale-onians, how you doing a little bit late? Okay. Enjoy the show once you get to hear it. Today's topic of interest, we got a few things we're going to go over. Yesterday at the shop, at the range, was ladies' night. Had a lot of people up there shooting and having all sorts of fun and tearing up targets, the whole works. And the ladies get to shoot for free all night long. So ladies, bring your ladies. Guys, bring your ladies. And the ladies get to shoot for free. It's that, I'm trying to be cultural here, right? Proper. Okay. I don't care who you bring. If you're a woman, you shoot for free every third Friday of the night. Now, September 30th, last Saturday of the month, will be my next license to carry class. That'll be Saturday at 2 p.m. The class is $60. And if you already have a license and you want to take a refresher course, that'll be $40. And if you haven't heard about it already, effective September 1st, they dropped the rates down from $140 for a basic sign up down to $40. So it's pretty cheap now to get your license to carry. However, because I think the numbers are almost a half a million people with licenses, and there's probably going to be another half a million running to the gates because the price just dropped. When you go to get your license, it may take a little bit longer because they got so many people inundating the system. But September 30th, this month, last Saturday of the month, is the next license to carry class. October 13th will be our next round robin, and you need to start preparing for this because we're going to have a pretty nice prize unless for some reason it gets taken up quicker than that. But we should have another Shockwave, Mossberg 590 Shockwave. And if not that one, we'll have some nice pistol, but I'll be broadcasting it on Facebook Facebook and on the website and all that, so you can check that out. But it's a great competition. It enhances your skills dramatically. And if you, I've had people come in there who've shot very rarely, kind of apprehensive and nervous about doing it. And after they do the first one, they're exhilarated. They go, I can't wait to come back. And I've been noticing in the last few months, the people that started out like that, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 months ago, are getting better and better and better to the point where, hey, you know, they're very competitive. You just got to learn how to get over the nervousness of competing, the nervousness of using different guns under time constraints, and your accuracy. So it's a great way to train. And normally, to shoot at the range, it costs $10 for the night to shoot. Well, for $20, a $20 entry fee, not only do you get to compete, you'll get to shoot all night after that, but you get to compete, you get some great training, and if you win, you'll get a great prize. So check it out. That's this October 13th, and then October 20th, once again, will be Ladies' Night. That's the third Friday. So it's every second Friday is the competition, the Round Robin competition. Every third Friday of the month is the ladies only. Now, seminars. If you go to aaronsgunshop.com and you check out all the different pages that we have there, one of the pages is called the High Cap Adventures page, and I've got all the flyers of all the different types of seminars that we do. We've got co-ed self-defense and home invasion seminars, ladies only, got shotgun seminars, M4 seminars, or any type of AR-15 platform seminar. We have semi-auto rifle seminars. That's because the AR platform is so, so many people have it. We just have a class specifically for that. But a lot of people also have AKs, SKSs, M1 carbines, M1 Garands, M1A1s, all different types of semi-auto rifles. So if you've got any type of semi-auto rifle, and this goes for any class or seminar that I just mentioned, if you have a group of five or more, we'll set you up a class. Be an all-day Saturday. Starts about 8 in the morning, goes till about 6 in the evening. Barbecue lunch is provided. It's a lot of fun, and it's basically a rainbow effect of training. We're going to go through the entire spectrum of the rainbow to see the weakest points that you have, and so that we can help you and teach you to focus in on those particular points. Also, if you have any parties going on, give us a call at Aaron's. Corporate parties, private parties, weddings, things of that nature. It's a fun place to go and do that type of thing in conjunction with your events. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back from the break, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go to our segment Tactical Snacking with Janae Goodman, and everybody's been loving it. You go to Facebook, man, she's getting hit after hit. So we'll see you on the other side of Janae. Talk to you soon.
Hey there, folks. There's not much herbs can't do, and I can't wait to tell you all about it. My name is Janae Goodman, and this is Tactical Snacking. Herbs are plants that produce leaves, seeds, or flowers. They do not, however, produce fruit. Herbs can be used to enhance foods or recipes. They are used in perfumes and even have some medicinal properties. Thankfully, our ancestors dealt with the trial and error methods of herbs, so we don't have to. Now, before we continue, I do need to preface this segment with a disclaimer. I am in no way, shape, or form a doctor or healthcare provider, so please do not use this information in place of your current prescriptions or healthcare practices. Fresh and dry herbs can be used interchangeably for most cooking practices. It is no issue for you if you don't have these growing in your backyard, or if you just find it easier to pick up a bottle of dry herbs at your local grocery store. When it comes to fresh herbs, please remember to use them as soon as possible. If you do not plan to use them right away, wrap your herbs in a damp paper towel and place the ends of your bundle in a small amount of water. This will help keep your herbs from wilting or oxidizing. Dried herbs are easy to make at home. All you need is a bunch of fresh herbs and somewhere to hang them. Be sure to wash and dry your herb bundle and hang them somewhere to dry. Make sure that area is dried and clean and they won't be disrupted. I bundle my herbs with a rubber band and hang them with a bent paper clip. You can place a coffee filter or a paper towel behind your bundle just to make sure to catch any extra moisture. Your leaves or flowers will fade to a brownish tinted color, and they'll be flaky to the touch when they're ready to be broken or ground down for use. When ingested, herbs can pack a handful of health benefits. They can easily be worked into your favorite recipes. Here's a recipe for herb-infused oil. All you need is an oil of your choice. I recommend olive oil and dried herbs of your choice. I want you to keep in mind that fresh herbs won't work very well for this recipe because of the fact that it's meant to sit and last for up to a year. All you need to do is place your herbs in a clean, dry, airtight glass jar or bottle. Cover the herbs by at least 1 inch of oil and shake the bottle. Leave it in a sunny or well-lit area and make sure to shake it at least once a day. After about 2 weeks, You can choose to strain the dried herbs out of your oil, or you can choose to leave them in. Essential oils are concentrated forms of the plant. You can find these oils in scents such as oregano, mint, sage, rosemary, the list goes on. Although herb essential oils do exist, they are not the same thing as an herb-infused oil. Notice I said scents and not flavors. Although most essential oils do contain material from the plant, they may also contain chemicals, depending on the type of essential oil that you decide to use. I do not recommend ingesting essential oils because of their potential side effects. You also must remember that they are concentrated, so please do use them sparingly. I use essential oils around my house for an array of different tasks. My all-time favorite way to use these oils is in a lavender detox bath. It's great for days where I'm achy and tired or just need to de-stress from a hard day's work. I use 8 to 10 drops of lavender essential oil, half a cup of baking soda, and 1 cup of Epsom salt. Add each of these items as you warm your bath water. Make sure to give it a nice mix before you dip in. The combination creates a similar product to what people refer to as spa water. This bath will change your life. If you try this out, shoot me an email and let me know what you think. Herbs can also help our health stay in tip-top shape. For instance, parsley is actually known to help with heart health and blood sugar levels. Sage and rosemary have anti-inflammatory qualities. The next time you're dealing with a cold, perhaps try picking up some basil. It's said to have antiviral and antibacterial properties. Don't even get me started on the fact that oregano and parsley may reduce chances of cancer. I could legitimately talk about herbs and how amazing they are for our health, for our food, but unfortunately, Matt only gives me about 5 minutes a day. So, once again, my name is Janae Goodman. This is Tactical Snacking. Thank you for listening in. Shoot me an email at tacticalsnacking@yahoo.com. That's tacticalsnacking@yahoo.com. Have a great day, y'all.
Now time for the master of manners, the communicator of common sense, and the epitome of encyclopedia, Officer Randy Dixon, the voice of law enforcement.
Good morning, everyone. Hope you're having a great Saturday. A little cloud cover this morning. Going to be another 100-degree weather. The positive thing is, up in the Rockies, it's snowing and the trees are turning gold. I also have some really good positive things to start out with today. The Dallas Cowboys won this past week. That was a good thing. But on a lighter note, it is only 6 months, 6 months to your income tax returns are due. 6 months. But to make things even better, it's exactly 100 days till Christmas. That means only 14 more Saturdays to get your shopping done. Today, what we're going to do is we're going to look at something, and it kind of ties in with what we're talking about on the show today with the gun shop and with the lawyer. We're going to talk about being neighborly. What is a neighbor? What does it mean to be a good neighbor? You know, there's a major insurance company that has a slogan that begins with, like a good neighbor, some is there. You know what? The message that company wants to convey is that you can count on it in times of need, just as you can count on a good neighbor. Now, but is there a difference between being a good neighbor and being neighborly? That is the question today. Many people today, particularly those who have grown up with Facebook and Twitter, have amassed relationships with hundreds and thousands of people around the globe. But you know, at the end of the day, how many are real friends? Friends and friendship mean different things to different people. So it's with being a good neighbor is different. Being neighborly means different things in different people as well. When I was researching this week to talk about this topic, I found an article that was called Being Neighborly Without Being Nosy by Rose Alexander. Ms. Alexander explained it this way. Depending on your personal preferences, being neighborly means you might mean staying invisible except for a quiet wave when getting the mail. Or you might think of someone being a good neighbor when he or she is available to help you out when you need help. You know, that's when most of us think about our neighbors, is when we need help. Do we need to borrow an egg? Do we need to give a child a ride to soccer when our cars broke down? That's part of being neighborly. But what kind of a neighbor do you want to be? If you're going to be a good neighbor, What does that entail? And that's the things we have to examine. We have to examine how we're going to be a good neighbor. We might begin by examining our own personalities, if you think about it. Are we reserved or outgoing? Well, everybody knows I'm very shy and reserved. Yeah, right. Are we shy or are we bombastic? And that's a hard word by saying very outgoing, sometimes overbearing. That will play a part in what kind of a neighbor we are. But the next thing to remember is that not everyone in a neighborhood will be like us, which means it's important to get in to know people of our neighborhoods, the ins and outs. This can start even before we move to a new neighborhood, if you think about it, folks. We can see whatever information we can find about the new neighborhoods. If we have children at home, maybe we'll probably try to find out what kind of schools we're living in. Not only does all this help us to get to know the neighborhood, but also reveals some common interest with those we already know and live there, and maybe can help us integrate into our own neighborhood better. Learning about and getting to know our neighbors can help us become better neighbors. Now, does that cut down on crime? Absolutely. Absolutely. And you've heard me talk about that in the past, getting to know neighbors, cutting down on crime. But today, I want to concentrate on, let's be neighborly. You know, and let me tell you a little bit about why I want to concentrate on that today. I teach at the University of Phoenix on Wednesday nights, and I'm teaching a class on grant writing right now. I've been a grant writer for 30, 35 years. Well, this falls into the law enforcement realm of grant writing. So there was a young man that was in my class, and he was a different color than I. And we were talking about grants and who gets grants and how grants are dealt out. Well, he talked about his neighborhood, how his neighborhood needs a grant to revitalize it. And then he made the statement, well, if I wasn't this color, we'd be getting grants. Well, you know, if you're a good neighbor, color doesn't make a difference. Just like the broken sticks that Matt did earlier in the day. Doesn't make a difference what color you are if you're a good neighbor. You know, let's look at Houston. How many people did we see on television rescuing different colors, different ideas of people, different persuasions of people? When time of need, when being a neighbor, color shouldn't make a difference. Do we have a responsibility to be neighborly to those that would live in our other areas and the streets by us? Yes, we do. A long time, someone posed a question to the greatest teacher to ever walk the earth. And who is that neighbor? You may be surprised not to know that good neighbor helped pen the good book, and he walked amongst the people and gave his life for us. And I'm going to get a little bit on the religious side here, and I try not to put a lot of religion into it because of the separation of church and state. But I'll tell you one thing. You can't get away from what the teachings of the good book do to us when it talks about being neighborly. In fact, Jesus, the greatest neighbor of them all, presented an entire parable to show how important it is to be neighborly. And not only that, he showed how being a good neighbor figures into inheriting peace and in the afterlife as well. You know, and I'm going to kind of tune this to a lawyer. A lawyer asked Jesus Christ what he needed to do to receive eternal life. Jesus, knowing that it was a lawyer's duty to be familiar with God's laws, answered the lawyer with a question of his own. He said unto him, "What is written in the law? What is your reading of it?" So he answered and said, "You shall love thine Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." I believe that's one of the passages of the Bible, as a matter of fact. The lawyer answered correctly, and Jesus advised him to do this. But the lawyer, wanting to justify himself, asked, "Who is my neighbor?" Jesus took the opportunity to explain the answer to his questions with a parable. To understand a parable, it is helpful to give some background on the day. Accordingly, the Pharisees held the fact belief that they were not only obliged to be neighborly with their own people, but others. The Pharisees held that the Jews only were to be regarded as such, and that the obligation did not extend to all the Gentiles. Once again, what happened to black, white, brown, polka dot doesn't make any difference to colors. Being a good neighbor involves compassion. The parable of the Good Samaritan reveals that the answer in the lawyer's questions, "Who is thy neighbor? Who is my neighbor?" The parable tells of a certain man attacked, robbed, and left injured on the side of the road. The first two travelers who saw the injured man may have truly felt bad for the man and may have wished him well in their hearts, but they simply had no time or inclination to become involved with him. Sadly, these two men were a priest and a Levite, men who should be setting an example of what it is to be a good neighbor, you think? However, when the Samaritan, who was despised by almost everybody in the community, passed by the injured person, not only did he feel bad for the victim, he had compassion, and that compassion moved him to action. Having dressed the victim's wounds, he then took him to the inn, where he told the person in charge to do whatever was necessary to ensure the man got the best of care. He paid the bill and said he was willing to pay more if needed. In the story, the parable, we see no mention of the Samaritan being concerned about who he was, the color, the race, the identity, the nationality of the wounded person. His caring actions were not portrayed for payback for some good deed that he had previously done to the Samaritan. They were only there to do the good deed that was needed. Nor does the account suggest that the Samaritan was hoping his good deed would cast his people in a different light. to improve the Jews' low opinion of the Samaritan people. That's all. He didn't care about that. He simply treated the unfortunate person as a neighbor. No doubt the lawyer was feeling a little bit uncomfortable now, especially when Jesus asked him to render a judgment on which of the three passerbys was a good neighbor to the injured man. And he replied, he who showed mercy on him. The lawyer answered correctly again, but perhaps a little more contritely this time. So Jesus told the lawyer, go and do likewise. We wonder what kind of neighbor was the lawyer after his Gentile correction or his gentle correction. Now let me get back to the present here where we're living right now today. Now fast forward to this present. If we want to be good neighbors, we must seek a comfortable balance with our neighbors as much as reasonably and safe as possible. Part of that balance is learning about some of the traditions of our neighborhoods or city. In some parts of the world, it is customary to bring a specially prepared meal for people moving in or when someone has lost a loved one. In Texas, I can't tell you the number of family members over the last years as I get older who passed away, and neighbors have joined together, brought meals, brought food, you know, and it does something to that neighborly bond. Opportunities such as these sow the seed of conversation that can develop into mutual respect, admiration, and yes, even friendship, folks. Becoming a good neighbor during good times is often simpler than during a crisis or natural disaster. If and when a crisis does arise, requesting help or providing help will know so much, it'll be so much easier because of the relationships that we've already forged forward. And I'm going to break it down to one simple little statement. How many of you out here today that are listening to this were taught the golden rule? And you know what that is. You know, maybe we're not sure how we're supposed to react with our neighbors or interact with our neighbors. But let's just turn that situation around. When it comes to giving our friendships, we should think, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them. A good neighbor is one who is there for his or her neighbors. You know, the Almighty does not use that term lightly, nor does he restrict it to one's local community. A good neighbor is one who helps and serves in good times and in bad, folks. So let's say this. Should we say, go and come back and tomorrow I'll give help to you? No, we sure don't, because tomorrow might be too late. There's an old saying, do not devise or do evil against your neighbor, for he dwells by your life and your safety's sake. You know, we all talk about karma and how karma is going to come back to bite somebody sometimes. But if we wish too much karma, we might be the one that gets bitten. So folks, to wrap up today, let me say this. I've got a couple of minutes left. Safety includes looking out for the well-being of those who are around you while being respected of their personal privacy and property. You know, you can do all you want, but if you don't take care of your neighbor, how can you expect them to ever take care of you? It might start with some just as simple as sharing some sugar with a neighbor or letting them borrow a tool or even volunteering to watch their house while they're away. Yet a small kindness can lead to as much a person can do. Finally, if a person is a good example, believe me, and I'm gonna say it, and I'm gonna put it out there for you. But finally, if a person is a good example of what it means to be a good Christian, as a lot many people profess to be, it can all be summed up in this one saying: "You shall love your neighbor as yourself." Love does not harm to a neighbor, and love says do no harm to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fall. Even if those around us don't understand or value being a neighbors, we certainly can. It's the Texas way. Just look what Texans have done over the last 3 weeks here in our state. But why do we have to wait for a calamity before that happens? When I was coming down here this morning, I heard them say that in the last 2.5 weeks, Texans, and just Texans alone, have raised $27 million to help the people in the Houston area and in the coastal areas. $27 million. That's being neighborly in my book. So, folks, until next week, have a great, great week. Be neighborly. Be a good neighbor. And like I said, I hope you understand that being a good neighbor also reduces crime. So have a safe time, be a good time, and enjoy yourself and hug your neighbor.
Welcome back, everybody, to Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. Again, it's September 16, 2017, and we are now in our product spotlight segment, sponsored by ANC Firearms out of Heidenhammer. My good friend Arch Koontz is the owner, and he's been there for quite a while. He's got a nice little shop going on there. He's got guns, shotguns, rifles, pistols, ammo, knives, accessories, reloading equipment, everything you can think of. And if he doesn't have it there, he can order it for you. But this particular week, this Saturday, we're going over the Heritage Rough Rider. And the Heritage Rough Rider is a neat little pistol, and it comes in a couple different calibers, 22 or 22 mag, or the combination deal. And if you go to my Facebook page at aaronsgunshop.com, you'll be able to see a picture of it. See me and Arch, and we got the revolver right there, the Heritage 22 version in the 4 3/4 inch barrel, I believe it is. But I got a review of it off of wideopenspaces.com, and this individual is talking about the 22-22 mag conversion at 6.5, but it's the same thing. So I'm just going to read to you basically what he has to say, and I'll give you any comments that I may have. And then right after that, we're going to have another special guest. That's Mark Boyer, retired Green Beret Mark Boyer, going over slings and how to use them. So right now, the review of the Heritage Rough Rider. Check out how the Heritage Rough Rider stacks up. In the ever-expanding world of firearms and firearm manufacturers, it is easy to be overwhelmed by all the different companies out there and the firearms that each one produces. One of the best ways to make an informed choice as to which firearm is right for you is to research your options and read as many reviews as possible. I recently took a closer look at a single-action revolver from Heritage Manufacturing Incorporated, known as the Rough Rider. The Rough Rider is available in a wide array of specifications and calibers, but for this review, it's the 6.5-inch 22-22 Winchester Mag combo gun. The gun, however, ladies and gentlemen, that ANC has on my Facebook page is the 22 version, 22 long rifle in 4 3/4-inch barrel, but he's got them all there. So continuing on with the article. The first thing you'll notice upon holding the Rough Rider is its considerable heft. In other words, this is not a light 22 revolver, especially when compared to some of the other featherweight firearms that are increasing in popularity. Weighing in at 34 ounces unloaded, the Rough Rider is not a gun designed for any sort of concealment carry. I argue that. They've got a small enough one, the one that we have on the Facebook page. I mean, they've got full-size automatics that are just the same size as this gun. So you can hide this gun. It's not a problem. I just don't know if it's a gun that you'd want to carry as a concealed weapon. Before going any further into the specs of this gun, I think it makes sense to first discuss the applications for which this gun would excel. The Rough Rider is an ideal plinking pistol, and with enough practice would be serviceable in the squirrel woods as well. Now, you aren't going to be making 50-yard shots on moving squirrels with this gun, nor will you be putting multiple rounds into the same hole on target at the range. And here, once again, I differ. It depends. It all depends on the operator. Once you understand the gun and how it works, the operator can master that gun and put them right where he wants them to go. So I'll differ on that part. However, that does not take away from the fun that firing this weapon provides the shooter. With its blue finish and Old West feel, the Rough Rider really brings out the inner cowboy in anyone who shoots this gun. The entire shooting process, from loading the 6-shot cylinder by manually rotating it to expose each new chamber, cocking the hammer with each new shot, and empty the spent shells after firing, is an enjoyable experience. There's just something about that satisfying click of the hammer locking it into shooting position that offers an experience everyone should experience at least once. As far as accuracy is concerned, the Rough Rider will never be considered a tack driver in any significant range. I've fired this gun in both 22 and 22 mag at several different targets at various ranges, and the one thing I learned was not to expect the kind of tight groupings and accuracy that are so sought after in shooting industries these days. Now, ladies and gentlemen, once again, I have to argue that point. Once you shoot the gun and you know how it operates, you're going to put them very tight if you know what you're doing with a handgun. So I have to deal with the opinions of these authors on these articles due to the fact that they may not shoot like I shoot, and I know what I can do with a handgun. So I'm just saying that the revolver, which I've had one or two or three of them in my career, shoot very nice. Now, back to the article. That is not to say that this gun is wildly inaccurate or anything along those lines. It's simply not going to give you the repeatable accuracy that some modern firearms will offer. And again, I differ. However, with enough time spent shooting and learning how to effectively utilize the open sights on the gun, the Rough Rider becomes a steady performer as long as expectations are held in check. And that expectation is this. If you're not a good shooter, expect to have loose shots. Recoil is very manageable while firing from both the 22 and 22 mag cylinders. That is to be expected with any weapon chambered in these calibers. The Rough Rider 6.5-inch combo is a very affordable gun, especially when you consider the fact that it is a combo gun and comes with an additional cylinder, effectively making it two guns in one. The build quality is also impressive for its price. Nothing about this revolver screams cheap gun, not in the least. So if you're in the market for a fun-to-shoot and affordable revolver to plink with and tote into the woods after small game, look no further than the line of revolvers produced by Heritage Manufacturing Incorporated. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you can get that revolver from ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer. It's 254-983-4417. And remember the Circle of Life. The sponsors support the show, okay? You support the sponsors, and the sponsors continue to support me, and everybody's happy. So if you like the show and like what it's all about, don't be hunting online, finding the cheapest price. Go to ANC Firearms, your local dealer. Support him because he supports the show, and it's one big happy family and circle. Okay, now with that, ladies and gentlemen, we've got about 6 or 7 minutes out of the hour. And I've got my very special friend here, good friend, brother from another mother, retired Green Beret, Mark Bohr. Mark, welcome again to the program.
Hey, thank you very much for having me, Matt. I know this is a very special program for you, and it's always great to see Trey here behind the mic. So, hey, can I talk to you a little bit about slings?
You know, Mark, I would be so happy if you talked to me about rifle slings. Yes.
Well, that's terrific. For your audience out there, I'm an operator, and I was born with a sling on my weapon, all right? I do understand that here in the civilian world, a lot of guys have a rifle or a firearm, a shotgun, perhaps a long gun, in their vehicle, and they don't have a sling on it. So when they have to engage a hog or a situation, they're going to reach back there, they're going to grab that rifle, and then they're going to engage. However, if for some reason they have a malfunction, they have to go to their sidearm or the secondary weapon, now they've got a weapon in their hand. They're going to probably have to lay it down, and that creates a bad situation because now they have lost control of the weapon. Same thing if you're hiking over a barbed wire fence while you're out hog hunting or deer hunting. You prop it up against a tree to use the latrine, and now you've lost control of your weapon. So I wanted to talk about slings because they have saved lives in my situation, and you don't lose control over your weapon at any time. Even if you're unconscious, been blown out of your gun V or whatever, you still got your weapon. Your buddies can grab that weapon and haul you out of that burning vehicle. Anyhow, I don't want to elaborate too much on that. We're not going to have burning vehicles in Temple, Texas, are we?
And this is not hearsay. This is practical application from someone who's been around the block many times. So go ahead, Mark.
Many times. Okay, so slings. You got a weapon without a sling, which I don't like that idea at all. But then you've got a single point sling where if...
And ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be making a video of this. So you're going to hear it verbally, and Mark's going to describe the best he can verbally, but it will be on YouTube and on my Facebook page, hopefully by Monday or Tuesday.
And also, before we do any kind of weapons training, we clear the weapon by holding it in a safe direction, removing the feed, making sure there's no ammo.
Magazine is clear.
Right. Now we're going to lock the bolt to the rear, place the weapon on safe, and we're going to inspect the chamber.
Weapon is on safe. The chamber is clear.
We're also going to inspect the face of the bolt, because if you're looking at it from this angle, you're not going to be able to see if there's a bullet that did not properly eject. So you do got to look at the chamber and the face of the bolt.
And it has been done, and it is clear.
Okay, I'm going to release the bolt, let it go forward, insert the magazine, weapon is on safe, and...
Let me make a comment, Mark. What he is using right now is an AR-15 type weapon. It's in a 22 caliber form, but it's the style of an AR-15 platform.
It's a heck of a lot cheaper to train with this and then transition to your regular 5.56-223.
That's right.
Now, a single point sling would be one connection to the weapon. Usually it's mounted right here behind the charging handle on the M4 platform. However, when it hangs and you have to go to your transition. Now your weapon is flopping all over the place.
Nothing like a floppy gun, huh?
I hate a floppy gun, and so does my wife. But anyway, I hope she's not listening. Anyway, I have a two-point sling, two points of connection. So when I put it over my shoulder and I'm carrying my body armor, or if I'm just moving out, it's hanging. It's not flipping back and forth. I have nothing in the way of the operation mechanisms like the bolt catch or the safety selector switch. Thank you. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I'm usually pretty loud. Anyhow, so now it's hanging, and I can transition to my secondary weapon if I have to. If I run out of ammo, I can come back to this weapon, engage properly, or reduce the malfunction, reload, whatever I have to do. But if I have to get it out of the way, it's out of the way. I can access my magazines. It's beautiful. I love it.
And what he's doing, obviously because you can't see it, he's got his rifle slung where it's in front of him now on a two-point configuration. And when he needs to go to his pistol, a transition, he slides the rifle over to his left side since he's right-handed, and he's going to acquire his pistol in his right hand. So, and then if he has to go back to the rifle, he'll put the pistol back in the holster and then swing back again the rifle. Because it's a two-point sling, it's under control. Continue on, sir.
Now, there's also this crazy thing called a three-point sling. Three-point sling is where you have a connection to the front, to the back, with a slide that goes across like this. It's a strap for a third point of contact to slide back and forth. So if you let it hang, it'll hang. But you also have a strap that is blocking the bolt release and the bolt catch and your safety selector switch.
I personally, Mark, I believe somebody who designed that has never been in the bush.
I agree with you. Because as it hangs on your body armor or on your belt buckle, I notice in Texas a lot of people carry belt buckles. Now you've got that strap right there, and it's going to hang up on your belt buckle. So when you put your weapon in operation, They just hooked on that belt buckle.
That's right.
Or anything else that you might have, a magazine pouch. You don't want that to happen, especially if you're in a vehicle. And in a vehicle, you can still use a sling. In the stand, in the sandbox, we operate with slings on our weapons. We're sitting in our vehicle. You get up, you get out of the vehicle, and you don't have to do anything because your weapon is right there. If your weapon is not slung on your body, it's going to get hung up on all of the equipment inside the vehicle. Same thing applies to the big Ford trucks that are out there hunting down deer, because you got all kinds of stuff in that truck. You don't need it to be hung up in the back seat. If you see something you have to engage, you just get out of the vehicle. You got your weapon. It's there.
It's like ID, man. You can't leave anywhere without ID. You must have your ID.
Right.
Don't go anywhere without your weapon. If you're going out there hunting, if you're going out there for self-defense, the last thing you want is disconnect from gun and body. And the way you've got it on here with your two-point sling is, in my opinion, the best. What about the, I like this one too, the two-point adjustable sling.
Two-point adjustable sling.
That's just like you have right there, except it's got the strap where I can loosen it up. Let's say I've got a rucksack or a large vest, and I've got to expand the length from point A to point B of the strap. Otherwise, it won't fit me. It gives me adjustment, or if I have to tighten it up, on my body, I just pull a strap real quick. What about those?
I think that's a great idea because, like, at the range last night, I was wearing my body armor, and they have adjustment buckles. Sometimes they're quick-release adjustments, and they can get caught up on things.
Hold on one second. Trey, just let it go for a minute.
They can also get caught up on things and extend when you don't want them to happen. So you have to adjust it and make sure it's locked and secure for that situation. If I go from body armor to like no armor, then I'm going to have to tighten that thing up and make sure that it's clamped in place. It's not going to come loose on me and then start falling. That would be a bad thing.
Okay.
And everybody, if you're interested in holsters and slings, make sure they're secure. You train, you practice with them. Holsters should always have some form of retention. It should not be flopping around or you're going to lose control. Military recommends a lanyard on your pistol.
Ah.
Lanyards like to get caught up on things. And if you train properly and if you have a retention holster, then you will be a responsible gunslinger and you won't have any problem with that weapon falling out and losing it somewhere. They call those dummy cords for a reason, because dummies need them. Okay, and that's all I'm going to say about that.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Mark, that was Mark Boyer, retired Green Beret, talking to us about slings. This video will be up probably Monday or Tuesday on YouTube. Make sure to check it out. Subscribe to the YouTube channel at Aaron's Gun Shop, and don't forget to like us on Facebook. So Trey, let's take us out here, and when we come back, I'm going to have my special guest Naomi White, White's Leather in Milano. Awesome woman, awesome creations that she does. Can't wait to talk to you. See you.
Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
When calamity strikes, will you be ready? Sentex Tactical Gear in Temple has your military surplus equipment, gun accessories, duty gear, first aid supplies, bug out bags, and so much more. Call Sentex Tactical Gear at 254-231-3583 or check them out on the web at SentexTacticalGear.com. Sentex Tactical has both new and used clothing and equipment to fit your camping, hunting, or prepping needs. Call Sentex Tactical in Temple at 254-231-3583 or check them out on the web at SentexTacticalGear.com.
Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron prides themselves on service, resourcefulness, knowledge of the law, and attention to detail. So if you or a loved one has been injured by someone else's negligence, they can help. Call 888-637-6347 for help today from Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm. Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm will work as hard for your family as you do. Call 800-460-0606 for Capolino Dodd Krebs.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Butros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com. Everybody to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Today is Saturday, September 16th, 2017. And to my left here, I have a special guest, Naomi White of White's Leather from Milano. Naomi, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show today. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, and I thank you for having me here.
Oh, no, thank you for coming on. Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you something here. We're going to be talking 50 shades of leather. Yeah, there's so many different things you can do with leather. I just wrote down a handful of things, like the elegance of leather, the exotic nature of leathers. Would that be the right word? Exotic?
Yeah.
Utilitarian types of leather work, sporty, classic, all sorts of things. And I've known Naomi for, gosh, going on 20-something years. And I would go to you occasionally and get some work done. It was nothing but professional. And I wanted people to, if they don't know who you are yet, to learn of you. So, Naomi, why don't you tell us, say hi, who you are, and quickly about your shop, where it's located, and how they can get in touch with you.
Well, I'm Naomi White. My shop is in Milano, Texas. I have been there. I've had the shop about 20 years or so. And it's right there on the highway. I started out doing boot repair. And we worked into a little saddle repair. And then I eventually... Eventually, I got to where I learned how to tool leather and started making items such as belts and wallets, and it has just worked into many items.
Well, what gave you the bug to do leather?
Well, I guess while doing boot repair, you see items from other leather workers and whatnot, you know, that they make custom boots and things like that. And I've always been interested in crafts and things like that, so it just got me started.
So you're basically fixing things, and in the course of you going, hey, I can do this. I'm creative.
I
got some ideas of myself. I want to be ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you something. I walked into her shop 20-something years ago, or just less than that, and I don't even remember why I went in there. It was probably having to do with a gun holster, most likely. And I walked in, and one of the first things that I saw on her counter was a 3D image of a wolf, was it?
It was a wolf. Was the first one I did.
And of course, you know, I'm thinking it's multi-layers of leather and all this kind of stuff. And come to find out, you know how thin like a chamois is? A chamois to dry your car off? That's a piece of leather. Naomi turned that thin piece of leather into a 3D picture that was at least 2 inches in depth, and I was amazed. And ever since then, it's just like, that's the woman to go to. And Naomi, let's start off by showing them what you got here. This is absolutely beautiful, and you're not going to get to see this until about Monday or Tuesday on the YouTube channel. Don't forget to go to Aaron's Gun Shop YouTube channel, become a subscriber, and then be on the Facebook page, because this whole program will be rebroadcast on the Facebook page. But right here we have the American flag with an eagle in a three-dimensional view of one piece of leather. Talk to me about that, Naomi. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Well, the first one I saw was a bear, and I was just amazed at what they had done with this. So when they said I could go to a class to do this, I had to go. And it's amazing how it's done. The leather's actually worked from the backside. It's pushed forward and tooled and shaped, and then you fill the back of it with a putty of leather dust and rubber cement, and then you work the front, your feathers, and you know all that.
What's the stretch factor on leather? It looks as though it's going to rip to shreds as far as it's sticking out, because I'm looking at the thinness of the American flag, and the eagle head is protruding from that at least an inch and a quarter.
Leather's quite amazing. It is. You wet that leather. You have to wet it, and it will stretch and it will give. And it's just amazing how you can form leather.
Okay, so what this work does, it shows your incredible ability to tool leather. But do you do that as gifts? Is this some of your personal stuff? You just like to do it for yourself? Or do you actually promote this for sales? Do you,
the three-dimensional?
The three-dimensional ones.
I just do those for myself, mostly. Okay. I enjoy doing that. And
how much time would that take for you to do that?
If doing nothing else, it would take about 3 to 4 days to do one of these.
How do you color it? How do you get the colors in there?
You use paints and dyes to do that. Acrylic paints, and then they have leather dyes and shades, you know, but stains and things like that that you can use.
Well, I'm impressed. So, ladies and gentlemen, when I see this type of work, I say, oh my gosh, okay. So making a wallet, can you do that? Of course you can do that. I mean, that's child's play as compared to what we just showed you here. So you've got your photo album here of all the different things you've done. Well, let's flip the pages from the beginning and talk about the different types of things you can do. And maybe tell people what you don't do. Maybe what's a common request from people that you don't do just because it's too time consuming or whatever reason it is. We've got saddlebags?
That's the first pictures here, some saddlebags. And
got some beautiful tooling on that. Do you make it for horse or do you make it for motorcycle or both?
Either. We can make it for both, yes. The saddlebags or for horses, and can make horn bags that they use, you know, with horses, and have some saddlebags for motorcycles and stuff, too. Have done some work with that.
Do you have people come in and say, you know, I know what I want, but I don't know how to describe it?
Yes.
Does your artistic creation come in and help them out?
We work with that, you know, with some ideas, and sometimes I have to work with their ideas, you know.
Sure, you got to understand what you're trying to grasp, what they're trying to get across. Now, this was pretty cool. You did a bunch of these wind...
Wine caddies.
Why don't you talk about those? You did a whole fleet of them.
We did several of those for the Houston Livestock Show Wine Department. And they hold 2 bottles of wine. The lettering on them.
Are you able to take that out of there so maybe I can show the screen? Or is it too difficult to do that? I'm going to try, ladies and gentlemen. Here, we got a picture. Here's the wine caddy. Is that what you call it?
Wine caddy.
Here's the picture of the wine caddy made out of leather.
It has a divider in the center, so it holds 2 bottles of wine.
So I guess the divider will be right there. The bottle of wine. I'm familiar with these in the sense of the wooden ones, so I kind of know what you're talking about, but it's the leather. But that's a very rich looking, type of a wine caddy.
Some of the decoration on these are tooled, and some of these are lasered. We have a laser machine, and some of it can be done with the laser machine also.
Okay. I think we're coming up onto something else that was pretty cool, too. You got gun scabbards?
We have gun scabbards.
Oh, this might be politically incorrect there.
That might be. But that's a person's, that's their personal.
It looks like a shaving bag.
Your wallets.
Belts with names.
Make a lot of belts.
Oh, that's a pretty gun holster. You can put your Heritage Rough Rider pistol or revolver in this gun leather here. Beautiful looking holster. Plain and simple, yet beautiful and rich looking.
Yes, and they're made to fit whatever the pistol is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fit that gun.
Now, this is interesting. What is that? It's blue?
It's a pair of chaps.
Ah.
That, you know, your
is that leather? Is that leather right there to the blue?
Yes. That's a pair of chaps. Make custom chaps so you can tool the tops any way they want them. Put designs, overlays, underlays on these chaps.
Okay.
And can make all sizes. Some of the little boys like their chaps when they're rodeoing.
Now, I'll tell you what, you're coming up on knife scabbards. There was a couple in here that were kind of large. Yeah, like the one with the elephant skin.
Yes.
I'll tell you what, why don't you take the picture out and I can show everybody what that one looks like when they get a chance to look at it. And... tell you what, let me get that one too so they can see the full size. Here you've got, it's a large knife, and here's the entire picture of the knife in the scabbard, and the dark color is the elephant skin?
It's elephant, yes. The gentleman, that was his hide, and he brought me a piece of that and asked me to make a sheath befitting that elephant hide, and that was the pattern that I came up with.
What won't you do? I think we said saddles because it's just too time consuming. You repair them?
I have made
them.
One saddle. Mm-hmm. Went to class and did that, but it's very time consuming. Just like boots. I have made boots, but a pair of plain boots or a saddle, if you're doing nothing else, will take you at least 40 hours.
So, I mean, you might do it if the price is right, but the person paying the price may not want to pay that price for the time it takes.
They may not want to for the time involved.
Right, that's
in
right.
It. You know, I kind of like staying with the smaller things.
But you do repair saddles. saddles.
We do a lot of repair on saddles and tack, you know, your head stalls and things like that. Now, I do make some tack, breast collars and head stalls and such as that.
Now, I mean, before time runs out, how can, do you have a website, phone number,
no,
Facebook?
No, a phone number is 512-455-7371.
One more time, because you're probably all writing this down.
It's 512-455-7371.
Okay, so give them a call. Ladies and gentlemen, if you got something leather, whether they do it or not, you should ask them anyway, and maybe they can work something out. But it's absolutely beautiful leather. She's still flipping the pages, and we're coming up with some more gun holsters, gun scabbards.
Pistol case.
More horse. So you do it all.
It's belts. That's a sling.
Mm-hmm. Rifle slings.
Yeah.
What's the most bizarre thing you've made out of leather besides these 3D images? And this isn't bizarre. That's just beautiful. But what's one of the biggest projects you may have had? Or is it all just stuff coming in all the time? A little bit of this, a little bit of that?
All the time. And it's all different. I have one rope bag in the shop now. And it's fairly large. And we have to price and see if we're going to make one of those or not. You know, it's quite detailed.
Speaking of price, how could somebody get an idea of what it might cost for creating something for them, like a holster? I know it all depends on the type of leather, but is there any set standard on a time frame? Estimated time frame is this, and then whatever the materials are, it's that?
Well, there's so many variables. You know, if it's a plain holster, it's not going to take quite as long. If you want something that's fully tooled, you know, a lot of detail, you're looking at a lot more on the price for that. So
now, it may only take you a certain amount of time once you start to finish, but because you are so inundated with work, if somebody, let's say I come to you, Naomi, with a request for a gun holster for my 6-year, okay? Old Western type of pistol belt. And plain Jane, just beautiful, rich leather, like one of those pictures you just showed me. What could be an estimated turnaround time for a product like that? Any way to make comment on that?
Okay, for a plain holster, I could have it out probably in a month, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking at a lot of tooling and detail work, you're looking at maybe 4 months or longer to get it out.
Because you got to be like an auto body shop. You can't just do one person's product. You got to do a little bit of everybody so that you get this house full of work out within about 30 to 45 days.
Yes, there is a list.
Well, yeah, I know.
And Christmas coming up, it's already started a list for that.
Now, you've got the shop down there, and you've got a lot of product in the shop. What do you have available for somebody to stop by and say, oh, wow, I like this? Purses, what else you have?
We have purses. We have saddles and tack, you know, for all your cowboys around. And we carry a line of custom knives and some jewelry and several things, you know, for the ladies. And
I know you've made some holsters for us that we had at the shop. We found a pattern and we replicated the pattern, and they came out great and people love them. It's good quality leather. The price is right on this particular design. So, I mean, it works. Ladies and gentlemen, if you've got something that you want as an interesting gift, something that may be different than normal, check out Naomi White at White's Leather in Milano. She does beautiful work. She might be able to give you some ideas. You go into her shop, you get to see what she's already accomplished, and that you can say, oh, wow, I didn't even think of that. A great gift. Knives, jewelry, leather, all that. So many things. Anything that I'm missing that you'd like to broadcast out there?
I was just thinking about, you know, small things. If you're looking at gifts, we did some keychains for some people and had their name on it. Plus, if they wanted, say, a Bible verse, if there was something they wanted, a little message to send to someone else, and we can have that on the backside of it or something. You know, just some little small custom item for gifts or things like that we can do.
You know how some companies, they give an Arctic cup with an engraving on it or a keychain?
Yes.
Can you do you have ideas of mass quantity items that's easy for you but is rich looking, just like you said in the keychain? Is there anything else that might be?
Well, now we do have the laser machine. So we do powder coating on the cups, your Arctic cups, and laser those also with names and whatever they want on them.
What's my time looking like, Trey? Okay, so we're winding this down. All right, Naomi, we're running out of time here. I got to go to a commercial break, and then we got some other segments to do. Before we end the segment here, tell everybody once again where you're located, how they can get in touch with you, and anything else that you want to get out there.
Well, I'm in Milano, right there on the highway, about in the middle between the two red lights. You can't miss it. And we love everybody to come in and visit in our shop. Donnie likes to visit.
What are your hours?
Monday through Friday is 9 to 5:30. Saturday is 9 to 4.
Fantastic, unless you're here on the show, right?
Well
then Donnie's holding down the fort, right?
He's holding down the fort.
Donnie, you're doing a great job, man. Hope you're listening. Okay, Naomi, it's fantastic having you on. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, check her out. I'll have this this interview up on YouTube and the website probably Monday or Tuesday. Check it out. There'll be a rebroadcast of this show on my podcast. You can check that out as well. So, Trey, let's take a break. And when we come back on the other side, we'll take care of a few notes. And we'll have Master Cindy Key coming on soon, too. So we'll talk to you in just a little bit. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Again, it's September 16, 2017. And we are here live with Master Cindy Key, owner of Centex Martial Arts in Rockdale. Ms. Key, welcome to the show once again.
Well, thank you for inviting me again.
Sure thing. Let's get that mic up there, make sure we got good communication going here. Ms. Key, I see the notes that you have here. Why don't you tell everybody what you're going to be talking about? And you got about 5-7 minutes to discuss it all. I hopefully we can get it all through. If not, we'll get you back again.
All right. Well, I want to review on last week the situational awareness, because it leads into what I'm going to talk about today, which is mindfulness awareness. And when you're paying attention to your situation, whether you're, you know, at a park or a parking lot or at home or whatever you're doing, shopping, you have to pay attention to your mindfulness, too. We are so busy now. I mean, everybody is multitasking. Their minds are on 100 different things at the same time, which doesn't make for a good way to pay attention to the things around you sometimes. So we really, really need to work and master ourselves, which is the hardest thing, which is mastering our emotions and what we have going on in our life so that we can pay attention to our surroundings and maybe notice something that's out of place or somebody that's out of place or maybe even somebody that's bothering a child and, you know, that maybe they shouldn't be there. We need to notice those kinds of things, too, and be helpful in those situations.
Isn't that where most accidents happen is when you're so focused on an emotional thing of yourself, you don't
pay
attention to things happen, right?
Yes, you know, everybody has so many things going on. You know, we have deaths in our family and stuff. So we all have to kind of work on controlling our emotions. That's even more important than controlling the other person if you're being bothered, is controlling your own emotions. Because if you flip out and then you're like, oh, I don't know what to do, you know, they're attacking me, they're choking me, they're grabbing me, they're punching at me, I don't know what to do, then you freak out and then you can't control your emotions enough to react and defend yourself. The other part of that is that you got to have confidence in yourself and confidence that you can take care of the situation. And confidence, martial arts helps develop confidence, but I mean, you can develop confidence in a lot of different things. If you're good at something, that makes you confident, and you just need to carry that over with football, you know, baseball, if you're a good artist, whatever, you know, take that confidence that you already have and let it fill the other parts of your life so that whatever situation you get in, you have confidence that, you know, you can take care of business. Another thing is the will to survive. You know, if you are, God forbid that anybody would be challenged or attacked, but if you are, you have to have that. You have to have that will to survive, and that's where another part where the emotions come into play, because if you're feeling really sad or you're really upset about something and you're not paying attention and then somebody, you know, bothers you or attacks you or you get in an accident or anything, you know, all these things are going to affect how you will respond to what's happening to you. But, you know, if you're so sad that you, you know, you're like, oh, you know, I don't know that, you know, I even care at this point, then of course you're not going to survive, because they're going to overcome you and you're going to have a hard time getting past that.
Right.
I think it's just innate in all of us to have the will to survive. We just need to bring that out and really have the confidence that we can survive and take care of business. The other side side of this is the emotions and the confidence of the other person. So if they, you know, if you are being bothered by somebody, you know, what's their emotions for that reason? Are they a friend of you, of yours, and they're just kind of ticked off because you said something or they heard something, and, you know, they really maybe don't have a lethal intention, they just are trying to like bug you or whatever, then that's a different response. So you have to gauge, and that has to happen in split second timing sometimes. You know, are they intending to hurt me? Are they intending to kill me? Are they just messing with me? Or, you know, is this just a friend of mine just trying to push me and see, you know, what I can do? If they know you do karate, that's why if you train, you don't really tell anybody what you're doing in the beginning, because, you know, you beginners go, oh, I do karate, and then they're going to want to know what you can do, and then you get in trouble. So you don't want to, like, brag on that until you really know what you're doing. And even then, you're supposed to be humble. So humbleness is the most important thing in all of life. But
Ms. Key, we have about 2 minutes left. So I think you're going to be doing, what's the next component of this for next week's show?
The next component is your body awareness.
Explain that real quick. Body awareness. What do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is that you're not 20 anymore, Matt.
That's right.
Neither am I.
Well, you don't have to broadcast it, my God. Okay. Okay, everybody's knocking on me. It's all right. I got confidence. I got the will to survive even amongst the insults. All right, Ms. Key, tell everybody how they can get a hold of you.
My number is 254-721-2775, and you can text or call or leave a message on that, or 512-446-7269.
And you're teaching what exactly?
I'm teaching a mixed martial arts. I'm trained in Kajikembo. I have black belts in Kajikembo, Shorinru Karate, and Jansamusul Taekwondo. And I use all of that for our self-defense moves, but the base of the forms is Taekwondo based.
And you definitely know what you're doing. Ms. Key, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. Trey, what do I got? What's left? A minute? All right, let me wind this down. Ms. Key, thank you so much. Stand by. I'll talk to you after the show. And ladies and gentlemen, this was our first simulcast. Remember, you rock Dalonians, however you call yourselves. The show should have been on at 10, but it's preempted due to a football game. It'll come on right after the show, so you'll hear this, obviously, after the football game. But I just want to say it's been a great opportunity to be doing simulcast now. Next week will be the same from now on until something else changes. And until then, give us a like on Facebook. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the Facebook page and like us there. Become a subscriber to the YouTube channel at Aaron's Gun Shop. Give us an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. And until next week, keep your powder dry, and God bless.